Welcome to The Jump. I'm Rachel Nichols. I am joined by our senior NBA writer, insider Ramona Shelburne, and of course, our NBA champ, Kendrick Perkins. Friends, we're coming up in this show. We are trying to talk Timberwolves. They fired their head coach, Ryan Saunders, hired someone outside of the organization to replace him. We'll let you know how we feel about that a little later in the show. And coming up in this segment, LeBron James says he needs to adjust without Anthony Davis in the lineup. What do you expect to see from LeBron moving forward? First, though, we're going to check out who's in the zone, brought to you by AutoZone. That would be the Brooklyn Nets, as they just swept a five-game road trip and have won six straight overall. They held off the Clippers in a nail-biter across the street at Staples Center last night. Perk, are you feeling good, bad, everything? What are you feeling about the Brooklyn Nets right now?
Look, it is, in the words of James Harden, it is scary hours for the rest of the league.
Yep.
They have figured it out. The ball is moving. Players are moving. They're playing defense. You look at James Harden numbers, he's averaging 24, 11 assists, 8 rebounds a game, shooting a career high at 50%. Kyrie Irving is having a career year, averaging 27, 4, and 5, shooting 52% from the field. But here's the thing. They're getting the others involved offensively. And we all know that you're going to need the others in the playoffs to help you win playoff series. But also, when others are getting involved offensively, the other role players, it makes them want to play defense. And this is why the Brooklyn Nets defensively has risen in the ratings, because now guys feel involved, they feel engaged, and this is scary hours for the rest of the NBA.
Look, and they don't even have Kevin Durant right now. I mean, like, that's what's real scary. And I want to say, a lot of us have talked and said negative things about James Harden, Kyrie Irving, Kevin Durant over the years. They've taken a lot of negative criticism on social media for some of their actions or statements or quotes, or they give us endless fodder to talk about. Look, this is why they are all-stars. I mean, they are so good, and I'm just enjoying watching James Harden play right now. He is just a savant out there. I mean, we knew how good a passer he was, but every night that I watch him play, I'm like, there's three plays a night. I'm like, man, look at that play. Whoa, look at that pass. Like, he is running that team. And I think Kyrie, Kevin Durant, James Harden, they're in this place right now where they are all sacrificing for the team. And, you know, I'm already writing my story for how this team came together for when they get to the Eastern Conference Finals. I'm not going to say finals yet, because I don't know how they match up with the Sixers, okay? Or I don't know. I don't want to count the Bucks out of the Raptors. But I'm already writing my story of how they came together, because, wow, they are really impressive.
Well, I tell you this, Rachel and Ramona, guess what? It is championship or bust for the Brooklyn Nets,
that's
okay?
True.
And if they don't win the championship, this might be the biggest bust, one of the biggest busts in NBA history. I'm saying it right now. This team that they have right now got to win a championship.
And look, Ramona, you always talk about peeling back the curtain, right? I will peel back the curtain. We had the Nets after the Harden trade on our Saturday night ABC primetime broadcast. And I usually do a sit-down interview with a player ahead of those games. The person I asked for was James Harden. Mm-hmm. And Nets PR was like, Kevin Durant is having this kind of... I said, the way James has adjusted his game since getting to Brooklyn, to me, was the key to the way this team is working. I have been so impressed by the way he has changed in ways that, frankly, people thought that he couldn't. And it is what is making this Nets team go right now. Fascinating to talk to him about all of that. You can still find that on our YouTube page. There's a little plug for you.
There you go.
All right. The Lakers, let's move on to them, because they lost to Miami at home on Saturday in a game that went down to the wire. They were without Anthony Davis, Dennis Schroeder in that game. Afterward, LeBron James talked about needing to make some adjustments in AD's absence. Take a listen.
They're doing their part and more. And every time we're on the floor, we're all trying to protect each other and bring each other up, out on the floor every single night. You know, and it doesn't matter if you're making shots or not. You know, we are going to hold each other accountable. And everybody's just picking up in AD's absence. And obviously it hasn't been, in wins the last two games. But, you know, we're going to keep on working our habits and continue to be great for one another. I'm not settling on what I am or who I am at that point in time, being able to adjust to my teammates, be able to adjust to the coaching staff and the system that we want to play at that point in time. So, I think that's what it all boils down to. And, right now is another challenge for me to be able to adjust, not having AD for a long period of time is something that we haven't had. over the last year and a half, and now it's time for me to adjust again and see ways I can be even more effective to help this team win ball games, because that is the sport that we're in. We're in the winning business, and I've always been a winner, so it's time to click into that.
So interesting stuff there from LeBron, Ramona. What adjustments do you expect to see from LeBron with AD out?
Right. He doesn't need to do anything different. He's doing everything. He's doing right now? He's saying, I'm going to do more, even though he's already doing everything. And I think probably Laker fans cringe when he says that, because that probably means he's going to take over even more than he has been. What can he do? I think he's been trying to set people up more. I think he's been trying to get his teammates going. He can be a little more selfish. You want to be a little more selfish? Okay. You can go be a little more dominant. But, Perk, you know how Bron is. Like, he's just being a good teammate right now. He's saying it's on me, not you. But the truth is, they're one Alex Caruso shot away at the end there from winning that game against Miami. They weren't that far off.
Well, I will say this, from being on teams with LeBron James, he's going to trust his teammates, and he's going to continue to pass the ball. But from what I got from that post-game interview is that he's going to be more aggressive offensively, because his teammates haven't stepped up and been making shots. So those points per game is going to go up for LeBron James. Those shot attempts per game is about to go up for LeBron James, because he's going to pass the ball. But if they're not going to cash in and knock down shots, he's going to say, you know what? I'm going to take over. Mm-hmm. And that's what he do. I've seen him do it numerous of times on plenty of occasions. When teammates wasn't producing, he just elevated his game even more. So I'm expecting a couple 40-point nights. I'm expecting a couple 50-point nights from LeBron James while Anthony Davis is out.
Well, it's funny, though, Perk, that you mentioned that, because it's not just his point totals that go up in a case where Anthony Davis is out. You look at the numbers of his minutes per game. You look at the numbers of his touches per game. If you look at the time period before Anthony Davis had that initial injury, he was ranked 50th in the NBA in minutes per game, which is what you want for your 36-year-old superstar that you are trying to keep fresh in after a shortened offseason going into another postseason run. Now, since AD first started getting out of the lineup, first in the league in minutes per game, his touches have shot up too. That is something that the Lakers are going to have to monitor. I know that obviously LeBron would still like to win MVP, so that campaign is going to be ongoing through AD's absence. I know that the Lakers, that you can say seeding isn't important, but they do want to end up in the top half of the bracket, and there are some seeding issues there. He will still need to be that driving force for the Lakers, and they will just need to balance his minutes so that he is not, sitting on empty in the tank when they need him most in the playoffs. All right, guys, coming up in this show, we're going to talk about the other team here in L.A. Paul George forced to sit at the end of Clippers Nets due to a minutes restriction. He says he wanted to keep going. We'll get into all that. It's been a long time since anything with the Minnesota Timberwolves looked good. There have been losses and more losses, enough that last season the Wolves didn't even make the cut for the NBA bubble, enough that this season the team already has the worst record in the NBA. There have been injuries, too, to the point that D'Angelo Russell and Karl-Anthony Towns have played a grand total of 5 games together. 5. Since Minnesota traded for D'Lo more than a year ago. It's all been largely miserable, including last night when the Wolves came into the Garden to face their old coach, Tom Thibodeau. Minnesota fell behind by as many as 21, then eked their way back to a late-game lead thanks to a 15-point fourth quarter from Karl-Anthony Towns, including this nice little spin move. And if the Wolves would have held on for the final 2.5 minutes, I assume Ryan Saunders would have woken up this morning and still been the head coach of an NBA team. Instead, Minnesota folded, and within a few hours, not only had Saunders been fired, but Chris Finch, an assistant coach with the Toronto Raptors, had been announced as his permanent replacement. And look, Saunders being fired in itself, not a shock. Ryan is, of course, the son of late Flip Saunders, and it was a real feel-good story when he was made interim coach in the wake of the team getting rid of Tibbs. Remember how the guys doused him in the locker room after his first win? But Ryan was never able to get any momentum going, and the writing has seemed to be on the wall for a while now that he was on his way out. Still, it was the immediate hiring of Finch without any interim period or search process that did shock the rest of the league. Making that kind of mid-season switch to another team's assistant coach instead of giving one of the team's own assistants at least a look just isn't normal in the NBA. In fact, it's so rare that the last time it happened was 12 years ago. And it was even more jarring considering that the Wolves did have an internal candidate who many considered ready for the big chair, Saunders' lead assistant, David Vanderpool. Vanderpool had come to Minnesota from Portland, and when he was so abruptly passed over last night, two of his former players called it out immediately. Here's Damian Lillard. How the hell do you not hire David Vanderpool? And he's right there on the bench and has been in a front office successfully and on the front of a bench of a winning team successfully and has played a major role in the development of a dominant backcourt. Shaking my damn head. And then CJ McCollum. Make it make sense. Respectfully, make it make sense. We will see if Rosas answers that query later today. The Wolves are holding a press conference around 6 o'clock Eastern. But here's what we already know. Finch and Rosas go way back. They worked together for years when both were with the Houston Rockets, and Rosas actually considered hiring Finch in 2019 before deciding to extend Saunders instead. And we can probably deduce that Rosas is feeling his seat get a little more hot these days. And in those kinds of situations, front office execs often go with hiring someone they already know. But just because it's common doesn't mean it's not a problem. Hiring someone you go way back with, without giving anyone else a chance to interview, is exactly the kind of old boys club networking that keeps the coaching ranks of so many sports leagues overwhelmingly white, even though their players are overwhelmingly not. And I want to be clear, this is not to put down Chris Finch. The man could go on to become a Hall of Fame head coach. But big picture, the NBA needs to be a league where minority candidates get more consideration. And I'm talking about candidates way beyond Vanderpool here, where even if they don't get the job, they do get the experience of going through the hiring process, so they are more qualified the next time around. And Rosas, the first Latino exec to ever head an NBA front office, certainly knows this as well as anyone. So I'm going to at least hear him out tonight on his thought process before I pass judgment. But I can sit here right now and say this. It doesn't look good, which has been a problem in Minnesota for a very long time. And at this time, I would like to welcome in our senior writer for The Undefeated, Mark Spears, to join us for this conversation with Perk and Ramona. Mark, how are players and coaches around the league reacting to the Wolves hiring Finch?
Well, the NBA started the season with seven black head coaches, and David Vanderpool obviously wished he was one of those guys. I talked to one black head coach, and he said this: it's typical of the black coaching experience in the NBA. They use your skill set during the difficult times, but when it's time to reward you with an opportunity, they always seem to find a reason why not, and then expect you to continue to be the good soldier. Another black head coach texted me, "Fire Ryan. Hire Finch on the same day, pass over David Vanderpool. Crazy. Shaking my head. I don't know how David sticks around." And then I think another thing that stuck out to me, you know, Quinn Cook from the Lakers spoke about it on Twitter. So did Isaiah Thomas. Mm-hmm. It's now with USA Basketball. I hear that David was very popular with the Timberwolves players, but haven't heard anything from them. But, you know, Dame also said on Twitter, look at Vanderpool's resume. This is a former NBA player, played for the Wizards, played in the Continental Basketball Association. He was an assistant with the Blazers for seven seasons, departing to be an associate head coach, which means I'm close to be a head coach. He interviewed with New Orleans. He interviewed with Houston last offseason, but didn't get the job. And now to say that he's an associate head coach, that title seems a little hollow right now.
Well, I'm going to say this, okay, and this is what it is. It's not what you know, it's who you know. And despite what Rosa may say in the interview later on this evening, we all know what it is. Him and Finch are best friends. They've been best friends since the Rocket days when they was down there doing all the analytics stuff, and they're real close friends, and they trust one another. Here's the thing about hiring African-American coaches, and this is why African-American coaches are not getting hired and getting these job opportunities when they come up, is because in order for this to happen, we got to have more African-Americans in the front office. When you look, for example, mm-hmm. Jay James Jones for the Phoenix Suns. Mm-hmm. He's the GM of the Phoenix Suns. Who he goes out and hire? Monty Williams. Another example, before Daryl Morey got to the Philadelphia 76ers, Elton Brand was still calling the shots. Who he went out and hired? Doc Rivers. So until we start getting more African-Americans in the front office in position of power to actually hire former players, guys like Phil Handy, who have won 3 championships, guys like Jason Kidd, one of the greatest to ever play the game and was a pretty good coach when he was the head of the Snake, guys like Sam Cassell, who has been a long-time assistant under Doc Rivers and vice versa, work with superstar players. Until we get African-Americans in those front office positions, we're going to continue to see these trends because it's more so of I'm hiring my friend and not the guy that's best for the job.
Ramona, I know you have a little more insight on the other side of this, why the Wolves were so locked in on Chris Finch. Can you elaborate a little bit?
Yeah, you know, I remember talking to Gerson Rosas, I guess it was last year when he first got that job. And we talked about how many interviews he went on before he finally got this job, right? I mean, as you point out, he's the first Latino GM or president of basketball operations. And I like, if anyone understands what David is feeling right now, it should be Gerson. Right? I mean, he went on so many interviews for so many years and didn't get the job, and he finally gets it. So I'm going to be very curious to see what he says. But I checked in with Alvin Gentry, who was the head coach in New Orleans last year. Chris Finch ran the offense for them in New Orleans with the Pelicans. And Alvin said, you know, I really liked his style, the way he opened up the court. And one of his strengths, and I think this is probably what Gerson is going to talk about, is the way that he uses the big man, okay? He was in Denver with Jokic. He knows how to utilize a guy like Karl-Anthony Towns. And I think the Wolves are at this point where, as you pointed out in your monologue earlier, everybody's seat's getting a little warm, right? They need to start winning. They need to start going in that direction. And when you get to that point, you look at a guy like Chris Finch, you go, okay, he knows how to work with Jokic. I like the style. I'm comfortable with how he plays. This is how I want our team to play. And so I think we're at this stage where both things can be true. The hiring process is a problem, okay? There was no interviews here. It was in the middle of the season. But I can guess at what Rosas is going to say here, which is if you put an interim coach in here, then if they start going on a winning streak and they have the interim coach, then you don't get to hire the guy that you wanted because you got to leave with the interim coach.
Yeah, but Ramona,
okay?
Isn't that the point? Isn't success supposed to beget the job if they put in an interim coach and that interim coach does well?
Right.
Maybe it's because he actually deserved the job.
Yeah. And I think, like, that's why this is such a complex situation. You have a minority president of basketball operations who literally had this happen to him.
Right.
Who had this happen to him throughout his career and then kind of does that in this situation here. But you also have a spot where he's hiring a guy who's going to play the way that he wants this team to play. And I think he left Ryan Saunders in that job mostly because he let him earn his keep or not earn his keep, but because of his family's relationship with the Timberwolves organization, it was a tough position for him to be in. I think everybody universally liked Ryan Saunders. It just didn't work out. And so I think this is a complex situation, but what Mark, what Perk, what Dame, what CJ, they're all right too. So both things are true.
Mark, you heard Perk mention some other assistant coaches or head coaches at the college level around the league that deserve head coach consideration. Who are the other Black assistants that popped to mind for you?
Well, there's a guy named Nate McMillan. He's actually 23rd all time.
I've heard of him, Mark Spears.
Coach wins right now. You know, Phil Handy is a name that's getting higher and higher with the Lakers. Chauncey Billups is getting a lot of respect as an assistant coach with the Clippers. Obviously, Mike Brown, Sam Cassell, Johnny Bryant with the Knicks. I could go on and on and on, but a lot of these assistant coaches, and I want to say Black assistant GMs, feel like every time that they do what they are asked to do, to put themselves in position to get the jobs, they're using a football term. They're saying the goalposts are moved. Mm-hmm. And then that's, I think, what they feel for David Vanderpool. This team is 7-24. Unless Chris Finch is John Wooden, I don't know that he's getting this team to the playoffs. So what would it hurt to give David Vanderpool an opportunity to get promoted, to be associate head coach and coach this team and get an opportunity like a J.B. Bickerstaff did who has used interim coaching opportunities to become the head coach of the Houston Rockets and also the Cleveland Cavaliers now.
Yeah, and look, and I think it puts Chris Finch in a tough position, too. Yeah. As I said, this guy could, we don't know, right? This guy could go on to become a Hall of Fame head coach. It, this isn't on him specifically, but it puts him in a position where that hire has to be defended in a way that maybe it didn't have to be, and that is unfortunate. We will, of course, look forward to hearing what the Wolves have to say later today. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here. Everyone,
it's a lot of gospel in here today, Rachel.
Amen, my friend.
Amen.
All right, guys, stick with us. We got more gospel coming from Perk in this show. Steve Kerr saying Draymond Green, quote, crossed the line with his ejection against the Hornets on Saturday. Draymond has since come in and responded. We will discuss. First, though, here's what The Jump recommends for today. Eric Woodyard's piece on how Damian Lillard's training regimen includes boxing, which then helps shape his playing style and mentality on the court. Well, good music there. Find out how Damon flies boxing. We can knock off Eye of the Tiger with the best of them, friends. That's what we do here at ESPN. Check out his story during the break. We'll be back. It's time for one of our favorite segments here on The Jump. Oh, yes.
The ball deserves to go in the crowd after a bull move like that.
I think it's bull.
I just thought it was bull.
Don't give me that crap.
That Doc Rivers video is never going to get old for me. It's BS or Real Talk. We give you the quotes. You tell us how true they are. First up, Paul George, who was pulled for the final 2 minutes and 50 seconds of last night's game against the Nets due to minutes restrictions. He's recovering, of course, from a swollen toe. After the game, PG sounded unhappy about it. Take a listen.
You really had it going in the fourth quarter there. How hard was it to not be able to play those final minutes due to the minutes restriction?
Man, I think you know the answer to that.
You had said the other night that you probably couldn't have played 30, but you had 33 tonight. Were you feeling okay, though?
I was ready. I was ready to go. I wanted to keep going.
All right. BS or Real Talk, Perk? What do you think?
No, it's real talk. And here's the problem. When I was playing KG and Paul, when they used to try to do those minute restrictions, they used to go to the doctor and say, nah, I ain't coming out. Leave me in. But nowadays, it's not like that. You got the GMs looking at the coaches, and they have to abide by the rules, and it's because of the health of the player. Paul George was actually giving the Brooklyn Nets the work. I thought he was playing some of his best basketball or having one of his best games of the season. So it hurts a player not to be out there, especially when it matters the most late in the fourth quarter. And against the Brooklyn Nets, I believe he wanted to be in there. That's real talk.
Oh, that's definitely real talk. And so same thing for Ty Lue. And you know who wants to put him out there more than anyone? Tyronn Lue, okay? I mean, Rachel, right. How many times were we in Cleveland asking Ty, hey, do you think you're playing LeBron too many minutes? And he was like, yeah. No such thing, okay? But this is a front office decision. And, you know, you can criticize Ty Lue for not saving enough minutes for him at the end. But you know what? I watched this game. They weren't in it until Paul George got going. He had to put him in there all those minutes in that fourth quarter early on and to even give them a chance to be in it at the end. And so, look, if you're mad at somebody, you can take it up with the front office.
Well, and look, minutes restrictions, it's a complex thing. We've talked about this with coaches, right, about, hey, well, if you why not just use all the minutes in the second half then, right? I mean, there's been all kinds of permutations. The problem, of course, is that players get into rhythm in certain ways. They're used to warming up at certain times. They're used to playing a certain balance in and out. And so it's not that easy to just completely manipulate rotations and playing styles depending on what the particular minute restriction of the particular night is. But yes, you would like your best players playing at the end of the game. And I would imagine the next Clippers game, if there is a minutes restriction still on Paul George, that he will have those minutes to be used at the end of the game. That's just my guess. All right, let's move on to Draymond Green, who was tossed against the Hornets on Saturday night with 9.3 seconds left after disputing a Hornets timeout, which he felt should have been called a jump ball. Now, the Warriors were up 2 at the time, but they did end up losing after 2 free throws and a buzzer beater from scary Terry Rozier. So here is Steve Kerr after the game.
As his coach, it's my job to communicate with him and with the team. So that's what we've done, and that's what we will continue to do. But he crossed the line. That's the main thing. We love his passion and his energy, and we would not be the team we are without him. But that doesn't give him license to cross that line, and he knows that.
I'm just going to shortcut the whole thing and say that is real talk from Steve Kerr. And we'll go to some more real talk today from Draymond. This is what he had to say just a few minutes ago.
I was dead ass wrong. And not for the first tech per se, but once I had the first tech, I can't get the second tech. I was a bit disappointed. I'm still a bit disappointed. And myself, that whole situation bothered me. I know for sure it did. It bothered me more than being suspended from game 5 of the NBA Finals in 2016. This situation in particular, I had complete control over. I let that control get away from me, and in turn, I let the game get away from myself and my teammates.
Ramona, what's your reaction to hearing Draymond there?
I think that is the definition of BS, Rich.
Really?
There is no way that he regrets this more than what happened in the finals. Okay, that's all a very mature answer, and all those points are very good. I'm 30 now, not 25, yada yada. They lost the finals, okay? They lost the damn finals because he missed that game. Okay, I don't believe, yeah, sorry.
Well, look, I'm going to say this. They did lose the finals, but then they did go back to repeat and win two more after that. So I think he thought that situation was water under the bridge. But I'm going to say this. I think this is why Draymond Green said this one bothers him more than the one in the finals, is because he have guys on his team like a rookie James Wiseman, Kelly Oubre, Andrew Wiggins that look up to him. That march to the beat of his drum, that is he's their mentor, and he's the heart and soul of this team. He's the leader of their team. Matter of fact, Draymond Green really is the leader of the NBA. When he speaks out, a lot of young guys in the league listen to him. They follow his lead. For him to show those type of action during the game, cost the game, in my opinion. He cost the Warriors that loss. And they could have won that game without Steph Curry. I think this one hurts a little bit more because he got to be able to control his emotions and be that leader, because every guy is looking at him and a lot of young guys look up to him, especially James Wiseman.
Well, I certainly appreciate the maturity he did show. His coach had some very strong words last night about a veteran player, a defensive player of the year, an all-star, and it could develop into a rift on another team. And instead, Draymond comes in and deads it today and basically says, I agree with Steve Kerr. Now, we can go back and forth, Ramona. You make a good point about 2016. But the fact that he went out and said this in general really shows, yet again, the value that Draymond has for the Golden State Warriors. Let's keep talking about that, though, because Zach LaVine has plenty of value for the Chicago Bulls as well, trying to keep them in playoff contention in the East. Should he be an all-star this season? We're going to find out in the next segment. And it's right here. It's crunch time on the jump. Jimmy Butler told me when I asked him about the Heat's chances of making the playoffs, quote, book it. Ramona, after watching Butler and the Heat take down the Lakers, are you ready to book the Heat for the playoffs?
Yeah, look, it's like 7-10 makes the play. I mean, right? I mean, this is, it's not that big. They're already in that 7-10 range.
That's not the number to cite, Ramona.
I know.
In the East, there's like this coffee mug is the only one that's over 500. There's like three or four teams over 500. That's it.
Going out on a very, very long limb.
You could book it. The Heat will be in the East. They got one of the best coaches in the game. And I think the unsung hero in this is Kendrick Nunn. Inserting him into that starting lineup at that point guard position, the Heat has been playing phenomenal basketball. I already know they got Jimmy Buckets and Bam out of the Bayou. Ooh. That's his name. So I know close. I get it. I mess it up every time.
So close. I like that you're leaning into it. Right, Ramona? You got to lean in if you know.
I'm going to start calling him that now because that's going to stick in my head. Yeah.
There you go. Let's get to the Pelicans. They overcame a 24-point deficit to beat the Celtics in overtime yesterday. Perk, do you think this comeback will be a turning point for the Pelicans season?
It is. I strongly believe it is, because if you watch the game before this, when they played the Suns and they blew a big lead and the Suns came back to beat them, I think they showed a lot of class. They showed that they are capable of dealing with adversity. They moved Zion Williamson to the point in the second half, and boy, did he flourish well. For as getting to the buckets and get others involved, this is a turning point for this young Pelicans team.
You know, I'm glad that you framed it as a Pelicans question, because I thought for sure we were just going to go to talk about the Celtics being back to 500. Oh, my gosh, that was such a bad loss. But credit to the Pelicans for coming on back.
Again, whew, it's rough in the Eastern Conference.
Yeah.
A rough season. Our league pass game of the night, friends. Yep. Bulls at Rockets, 8 o'clock Eastern. 6 games tonight, but only one of them features Zach LaVine. So let's talk about that one. He made another strong case for his All-Star candidacy this weekend after scoring 38 in the Bulls' victory over the Kings Saturday, which, that's no small thing. Sacramento's been playing well. LaVine has scored now at least 30 in his last 4 outings, has become a must-watch every night. So, Ramona, producer Steve wanted the question to be, do you think Zach LaVine should be named an All-Star, and why is your answer yes? But you do have to, if you put him in, you got to take someone else out. So what do you think?
Look, I think he's in. Look, if you look at his stats, he's shooting 51.8%, 52% basically, yep, on the year. So we all have this image of Zach LaVine as a great athlete who's not a great shooter. He's like 45% for his career. 52%? That's pretty good, okay? He's, and I know he's taking a lot of shots this year, and he's carrying that team. They're not having a ton of team success, but for him to be shooting at that percentage with those stats, yeah, put him in. Come on, coaches.
Is Zach LaVine an All-Star? My answer is yes. Yes. And here's why. Let me tell y'all why, okay? You take Zach LaVine off this Bulls team, they will be at the bottom of the Eastern Conference, and I mean lottery. They might not have 8 wins on the season. This guy has been giving everyone that work. He has showed us that he is capable of performing and matching up with the best of them. I love his career highs right now. And right now, he's carrying this Bulls team. He's giving them life on the offensive end. And to me, he is stamped. And the coaches vote. Remember, the coaches vote for the reserves. And they count winning. And right now, the way that he has the Bulls playing, he is in my opinion.
Ramona, have you been looking? I know we only had to do starters, so sometimes you just look to that. But have you been looking at who the most sort of contentious guys will be on the border here?
I mean, it's interesting. In the Western Conference, I think there's going to be really interesting calls to make, right? I think this might be the year Mike Conley finally becomes the best player not to make an All-Star team. He finally gets that off his back. Right? The Jazz have been so good.
Yep.
It's going to be interesting in the East, right? Do you have two Wizards? Do you put Westbrook and Beal when they're having
I don't think the answer is yes.
Right? Okay, what do we do with Boston? Do you have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum? I mean, these are going to be tough questions for the coaches. But I just think his recent play, 52% from the field, I think they're going to give him the nod.
I'm on the Mike Conley bandwagon, by the way. Let's get him into an All-Star game. All right, thanks so much to Ramona, Perk, Mark Spears for joining us today.